It's a trap.
Hello and welcome to episode number 171 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
And while I'm going to apologize because I think this episode's going to go up a little bit late, we had to wait a little extra while because FFG just dropped the new points update for the next season of X-Wing, and there were a lot of big changes.
Yeah, and of course we're going to go through all of the exciting changes, or at least the changes that we think are exciting. And, you know, there's definitely enough points changes that, you know, it wasn't enough for just Tim and I to cover them.
Yeah, a little bit too big of a bite for us to chew. So we brought in one of our favorite Minnesota players, Andy Myers, who you might have seen his name pop up recently on some live streams. He made top four at the Seattle System Open. And we're really proud of a Minnesota player doing so well at that event, which is awesome. So we're bringing him in on the show to discuss these point changes with us.
All right. So let's not keep Andy waiting. Let's get right to it.
All right, so now I've got, well, Carson's still in Colorado, I guess. I've got Andy sitting across the table from me. Andy, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Welcome, Andy. Now, before we get into the points, we're going to have to do an abridged version of the interview we usually would like to do because we have a lot else to cover, but I think we want to let the listeners get to know you just a little bit before they take all of your words of wisdom on these points.
Yeah, so why don't you first let us know just how long have you been playing X-Wing?
Sure. I started playing X-Wing in the winter of like 2016, 2017, just kind of casually with some friends, and started coming to some of the local Twin Cities weekly events and getting crushed and... but really enjoying the community and trying out all my janky lists because I wasn't following any of the meta or anything like that. And
that's a habit of yours, too. You don't like to do exactly what's popular.
I enjoy a good jank. So, you know, I enjoy the creative side of X-Wing. Even when first edition was around, I still had a lot of fun. Carson and I know the fun availability of all the scummy things you can do.
Yep.
And so I'm glad that that has maintained its identity through into second edition as well. But I think the first time I really started caring about competitive X-Wing to whatever extent I actually care about it with
sure.
a serious face on is the... I ended up doing well in at the regional in Roseville here last year, and that was kind of my first step into the look at all these good players and look at all these fun prizes that are out here and
you got hooked on the more serious elements of the game because we all still have fun here, but there's some draw to the competitive scene in X-Wing.
Sure, I think it was less about myself caring about being competitive and more about the enjoyment that I get going to the different day-long events that thankfully in Minnesota we have a lot of opportunities to participate in. And I think that was something that I realized I really enjoyed spending my time going to those events, whether I did well or not, but just hanging out with my new friends and playing some X-Wing.
And would you say the community aspect is what you enjoy the most about X-Wing?
it's hard for me to quantify what specifically about
sure.
X-Wing I've been enjoying.
It's a whole mix of factors.
But as an extroverted person and the number of great local players, both in skill and also in enjoyable personalities to be around on a weekly or occasional basis, the community is something that I greatly appreciate about and something I place a lot of value on.
All right, so just one final question before we move on to the meat of this episode. If you had to describe your play style as either a pilot talent or a force power, what card would best describe you?
I think my upgrade card that I would choose is probably Fearless.
Nice.
it's because I am generally probably spending focus tokens when I should probably be saving them and just saying, yeah, let's roll the dice and see what happens. And that's my general play style, I think, is let's get in there and roll some dice and shake some things up a bit.
And it seems like an apt choice, too, because it is also a Scum and Villainy upgrade card, and you have a certain affinity for Scum and Villainy, I know.
Yes, yep. Big fan of the Scum faction and Asajj, and in first edition, I really enjoyed playing a list with like Torkoal Mux and just all the quad jumpers and lots of fun scummy.
Man, what is it about Scum players getting drawn to the Resistance, though? I don't know. It doesn't make any sense, but it seems to happen.
It's just because Scum wasn't good enough yet, and I mean, maybe after this point change, there's some cool tricks here. But I think we should dive now into our conversation, looking at the point change here. In classic Radio TCX style, we are not going to go line by line through every point change and point increase and upgrade slot increase. We're really, especially since this information is all new, we haven't seen any major events yet, we're going to kind of do the best of, or the things that really stood out to us, or maybe even just the things that we think will have a big impact on the game and the metagame. So I think the best way is to probably break this down faction by faction, or at least that's the way Carson arranged it in our notes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the best way to do it. Yeah, and let's start with the main three factions, because those are going to be different between Extended and Hyperspace also. So a little bit more meat on those guys.
Yeah, Rebel, Scum, and Empire all have kind of different approaches in Hyperspace and Extended, whereas the newer factions, since they're new enough, pretty much they're all Hyperspace and beyond. Function basically the same for the most part.
Carson, you missed a great beef pun just now.
Oh, did I?
What was the beef pun?
Oh, the meat of the of the Hyperspace lists.
That was unintentional too. I'm gonna leave this all in the podcast so everyone gets to hear this conversation. Let's look at Rebels though. So Rebels was a faction that had some of the issues that we thought needed to be most addressed. The ones at the forefront, probably the Rebel efficiency problem, Rebel beef being a little bit too good, and we also had Leia Organa crew also kind of causing problems for being so cheap.
Yeah, and we'll get to that in the Hyperspace bit. With Extended here, though, you know, we did have the Han Solo Falcon abusing inertial dampeners with getting that shield back. And I think we got a pretty elegant solution here from Fantasy Flight, in that the Rebel Falcons are just going to lose that illicit slot, but they get an extra modification slot in exchange.
Yeah, and I think this is a little bit of a sad thing to see, because it was kind of cool seeing the illicit slot show up outside of Scum and Villainy as kind of like a special feature to certain Rebel ships. Given their origins, you know, thematically. I think this was a good fix, though, to try and solve the problem of inertial dampeners in the R2-D2 crew card. So basically that interaction no longer exists. And they also kind of set up a kind of doubled down on preventing inertial dampener shenanigans by switching how many points it costs. It now has a scale based on initiative, which makes sense because it's effectively a repositioning option, being able to stop or go. So those scale all the way down from initiative 1, 3 points up to initiative 6 for 8 points. So the ships that can use it more effectively, be more reactive with it, are going to have to pay a bigger price for it.
Right, and what I like about this change here is that it doesn't keep Han from being played here. You know, they didn't really have to up his point costs. They just got rid of the troublesome interaction. So I think this is a pretty good solution.
Yeah, I think it was more future-proofing than anything, trying to make sure that this interaction didn't cause problems later down the road, even if we're dealing with the immediate problem of, you know, Handbrake Han. We also saw some point reductions. I think one substantial one was a decrease to the Warden Squadron pilot in the K-Wing. The Warden Squadron being the lowest generic, going up 2 points. And that's kind of significant. We were starting to see more and more spams of a lot of these generic ships.
Right, I mean, the K-Wing having access to that slam action, plus being able to take barrage rockets, you could fit 4 of them with some bombs and the Sabine Wren crew, and that was pretty difficult for people to deal with as well. So I think with just a slight points increase there, that's going to be difficult to fit all 4 of those in.
We saw a bigger change for the Rebel Hawks, which went down, at least on the low end, like 2 to 3 points each, whereas the Scum ones only went down a point each. Do you guys think that's a big enough change to make Rebel Hawks relevant in the game?
I think so. You know, across all of the Hawks, they have really good abilities. So having the chassis go down even just a little bit, I think makes them more appealing. You know, they're not going to be in every list, but there will be some ships that, you know, really do want that extra attack dice or boosted initiative that the Rebel Hawks provide.
On the Scum side, the Hawks Palob stayed the same, and Dace and Torkoal and the generic went down by 1 point, which is not really enough right. to, if you weren't already flying one the past 6 months, the 1 point difference is probably not really incentivizing you to all right. of a sudden look at the Hawks.
Yeah, I mean, I guess on that, I don't think the Rebel Hawk change, though, even though it's bigger than the Scum Hawk change, I don't know, it doesn't make it more appealing to me, and I'm not a player who's averse to flying Rebels. I guess Rorik, there could be an argument there. I could see some initiative becoming important now, but I don't know. I feel like the only way I'd be able to fit it in would be in, like, a newer version of some sort of Rebel efficiency list, and I just think those have gotten hit so hard recently that I don't know a little 5-hit-point Hawk is going to be able to make a big, you know, big addition to that and replace, you know, the already, you know, amazing efficiency you get out of Rebel Beef.
All right. Well, let's move on to hyperspace, where we had, you know, pretty big shakeups as well.
Let's talk about the big one right now. Or I think this is the biggest one. Leia going up from 2 points to 6 points. So this is a big increase. It's not bringing Leia back to where she was at the start of the game before people really realized how strong she was. She started in second edition at 8 points. So this is still lower than that. Do you guys think that this was a big enough jump to kind of correct the problem of an overuse of Leia?
I think now that people have seen how effective Leia is, I think it's great that she's going to remain relevant in the game as somebody who appreciates fluff and thematicism in the game. I think Leia as a crew should still be worth taking, but you do have to build the list to warrant it.
Right, you have to accommodate it. I think that's one thing I kind of like about second edition is you're talking about the thematic end of it. It's more like first edition got to the point where, I mean, even if I like the interaction or even if I like the list being played, there was not a lot of iconic Star Wars stuff out on the tables, which, or at least what I would consider iconic, classic ships, Millennium Falcon, classic TIE fighters. I like seeing these iconic characters actually be relevant game upgrades, which is cool, and relevant pilots. So seeing Leia actually be something that's functionally used makes the game feel more Star Warsy to me. And I think also kind of bouncing off your point there, like she's probably still good at 8 even or above that. It took the decrease down to 2 for people to realize the value. So now bringing it up, even if they eventually bring it back up to 8, I think people will still find ways to make Leia fit into their list.
Yeah, I mean, flavor-wise, I think it's good that she's still in the game. It's not a mechanic that I personally enjoy at all, so I think 8 points would have been a little bit better, and I think I'd still see play at 8 points. But, you know, 6 points, she's not going anywhere. She won't fit into every Rebel squad, but you'll still see plenty of Leia.
It's funny, dude. Actually, because I find her ability kind of annoying to play against. Like, I can deal with it, but it's just that little edge that gave Rebel Beef such a huge advantage. What I really like about it is the way the ability functions. Like, I like the use of charge counters building up every 3 turns. Like, that was one of the things that got me excited when I started to see the different ways they could use charge counters in second edition. So if, like, another ability, or we have some other abilities that kind of use a similar idea, building up to using an ability multiple times, I like to see that in the game. Like, I think that shows off some of what makes second edition different than first edition.
Absolutely. Now, for the rest of Leia's common friends that she was seeing in hyperspace, Wedge, Cassian, Braylon, and Ted Nub, they all go up a few points, which means with all those increases, it's going to be pretty difficult to fit most of those in the same list.
Yeah, it's getting to the point where you have to start making decisions, and you know, I think looking at the points, you can still run 3 of these probably in a list, but you're going to have to make a sacrifice somewhere, which I think it was pretty obvious that these Rebel efficiency lists were a little too good for the game. They were really annoying to play against, and they just, like, if the variance even swung a little bit in their direction, there was really not a lot you could do as even a skilled player. So I like having to, you know, tone down a little bit on the effectiveness of this list. Leia's more expensive, so if you're going to include Leia, you're probably going to make a big sacrifice on one of the ships, which I think is probably healthy.
Absolutely. All right, so let's move on to Empire, which did have some pretty dramatic extended changes. You know, of course, looking at the quad phantoms, which was very dominant in the extended meta. Those four phantoms, you know, most of them had Juke. Not really going to be a list anymore.
Yeah, the point changes here make it pretty much impossible to run an effective phantom Juke list. So we saw the generic Sigmas go from 46 points to 48 points, so a 2-point jump there. And then we saw the generic upgrade card Juke go from 5 points to 7 points. So in order to run a Sigma with Juke, it's going to cost you a whopping 55 points, which means that ultimately either you can only fit three of these in a list with something substantially smaller, or if you want it to be all phantoms, you're going to have to run maybe two of them with Juke, a generic or two. I'm not sure what the point breakdown is, but whatever it is, I don't think it's enough to make this actually a viable list and extended anymore.
Which is fine, because that list was basically just a fortressing list, so we don't want those to be good lists, right?
Yeah, but I mean, we talked about, I didn't really want Juke to go up, because I think that pulls its viability away. We talked about this in our predictions episode. Do you think that's a problem at 7, Carson?
Well, it certainly makes those new Naboo Starfighters getting those free evade tokens not want to take that 7-point Juke.
I wonder if they thought that was a problem, too, so they were going to up it anyway.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We'll see.
If you did take 3 Sigmas with Juke, that's 165 points.
Right.
You get a TIE Fighter.
What do you got for 35 points? Yeah.
Right. Well, it'd have to be some sort of TIE Fighter, but I guess I think the problem with that would be is like the virtue of the four Phantom list is that it can do the mobile fortress thing. Whereas if you slot anything else in there, man, you're going to have to be really good at flying to make those all converge at the same time and not just end up leaving, you know, some of your ships dangling out there to get focused down. I guess it would be, man, what are the TIE Fighters even? Do the regular Empire have the double wide barrel roll one, or is that an FO?
No idea.
Or is that first edition?
How many points is Aiden?
How many points is Aiden?
40.
Oh, good.
We also saw some point decreases, though, pretty substantially. Decimators all went down, I think, about 4 points across the board, along with a lot of the Imperial crew options.
Yeah, I mean, and the Decimators got an extra crew slot, so... lots of room to fill those Decimators out. They have a bunch of upgrade slots. I challenge you to fill them all and still have an okay list. But I think you can have a pretty cool Decimator now.
This is probably good, too, because we're expecting Decimators to enter hyperspace here pretty soon when they get the reprint coming up. And at that point, entering at a cheaper value means we're more likely to actually see them get played, which is probably good because I don't want to just face off against a bunch of TIE Swarms.
Yeah, I don't think anybody does. And yeah, the Decimator's been a ship that's really struggled coming into second edition. You know, it really relied on that 360 turret arc. And just going down to the double turret arc, the bow tie, has been a bit of a rough transition for the Decimator.
And it's still not able to boost.
Yeah, so hopefully, you know, it's a cool looking model. Hopefully it gets to see some table play.
With the Decimator's going down in points, another upgrade card that also went down in points that can go on a Decimator and might work out really well is Sienna Ree. And she is now down only to 6 points. And her ability seems like it would be really fun to try out and see if you can make relevant.
Yeah, she was one of those crew cards that when I first read it, I was like, oh, that's a really cool ability. And then I saw how many points it was, and I thought about the implications of trying to fit that in a list and make it functional, and it didn't seem worth it. Now at 6 points, it's a lot more appealing. If anyone doesn't know what Sienna Ree does, she's a crew card where after the ship she's on does a coordinate to a friendly ship. If that friendly ship performs the boost or barrel roll action from that coordinate, they then have the option to receive a stress token to rotate their ship 90 degrees. So it's kind of a supplemental ability to help out with more AC ships that want some quick mobility.
And you and I, Tim, before we started recording, tested this out with a couple small, medium, and large base ships to see if you were able to boost past and then rotate and have a shot on the ship you just boost past. And depending on the ship you take and which way you boost or barrel roll, it's totally feasible to get a ship in there and block, and then later coordinate that ship off of the ship it blocked and have a shot or something like that. There's some fun, fun options.
Yeah, there was some fun stuff you could do, because if you like bump into a ship at a couple different angles, you'd then able to boost past them and then rotate 90 degrees, which is cool. So potentially avoiding the arc, whereas you normally wouldn't get a shot, and then still getting actions, which is super fun. And I think this would actually, at 6 points, seems like a reasonably good deal. The key is finding what is the carrier that can actually take this. Is it a Lambda-class shuttle? Is it the Decimator, which is quite a bit more expensive than that? And what aces you pair up. I mean, Sunterfell is an obvious option. We also, actually, one thing I'm kind of excited about is we saw points go down for, in the extended format, TIE Advanced Prototypes, TIE Aggressors, and TIE Defenders, which all are ships that could potentially benefit from Sienna Re pretty effectively. In particular, I'm excited because the Grand Inquisitor went down a shocking 4 points from 56 to 52, which I don't know if you guys are as excited as I am, but I'm hoping we're starting to see the Inquisitor get back into the game.
You were the first person I thought of when I saw that point decrease.
He did a lot of good work for me in first edition, and moving into second edition, it was a rough start, and I had to leave him behind pretty quickly, but hopefully he's getting back into the forefront of things.
Time to dust him off.
That was the first second edition game that I saw Tim play was, here's my Grand Inquisitor, when we tried that out back at last August.
Yeah, and you crushed me, right?
I tried to use a first edition archetype in a second edition list without really looking at any of the points or upgrade cards closely, and realized this doesn't work, and probably for the best.
Though actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I feel like in that game you actually did use Fearless against me, and I canceled your range one bonus with Inquisitor. So we did get to see some fun new mechanics roll out. That was pretty fun. But looking over on the hyperspace side of Empire, they've been doing pretty good, and they didn't actually see a lot of huge changes in hyperspace. We did see a couple of their aces go up in points, but not nearly as much as I expected. Both Vader and Sutravel had a points increase, but, I mean, pretty small, right?
Yeah, I think it could have been bigger, which means I think, you know, those aces were doing very well in hyperspace, and this marginal tax, I think they'll be just fine. Pretty strong option in hyperspace moving forward.
Yeah, so because Sunterfell went from 52 to 53, which, I mean, is a very negligible, maybe eats into a little bit of a bid, or you're compensating for a point increase elsewhere, but that's basically not a change at all. Vader saw a 2 point increase from 65 to 67, which, I mean, yeah, any points increase is going to be a lot, so when you're, especially when you're trying to fit a big enough bid in there, because you're really relying on those high initiatives here. But I honestly thought we were going to see Vader go up to 70 and Sunter move a lot closer to 60.
One question I have is, why bother increasing Sunter at all?
Right. Well, like, the change is so small, it just seems like they didn't think it was a problem. So what was the 1 point accounting
what
for?
What was the 1 point? I would be very interested to know.
Token slap on the wrist.
Just like letting us know it's in there. Like, they're looking at it, but they're not ready to like bring the hammer down.
That's the yellow card.
Yeah,
it's your 1 point.
Your 1 point warning, and then it goes up another 7. It's interesting though, because I mean that's going to be locked in for. They said they're going to do point changes every 6 months. I don't expect these would be something that they'd need to do an emergency, you know, address on. So likely these are going to be viable ship types for the coming couple seasons.
Yeah, I mean the other pretty popular hyperspace list for the Empire was just your generic TIE LN fighter is a swarm of 6 of them. You know, Howlrunner, Iden, I was hoping would go up at least a little bit. No change. So those will also be a great choice for hyperspace moving forward.
Which, I mean, that is thematically on point, having TIE swarms be relevant. I don't always think that's the most fun game to play against, but there is definitely some counterplay. I don't think it's quite to the realm of being broken yet. And we saw an increase to swarm tactics there. So there's a, you know, a little bit more of a cost if you're going to try and do some high initiative ship killing. All right, now we're going to move on to a segment I'm sure Andy's actually very excited to talk about. He had to suffer through our Rebel and Empire nonsense, but now we can talk about Scum and Villainy.
I flew Rebels right away when second edition came out because the local stores didn't have Scum conversion kits.
But yeah, that was true. Yeah, I forgot about that. There was the distributor issue.
It was like a good 2 weeks where we just didn't.
Yeah, that was hilarious. And TIE Advanced standalones, I think it was, from our local distributor. That was a funny problem. I had the privilege of getting most of my ships at Gen Con, so I don't remember that dark 2 weeks where we had to suffer. And then you ended up getting your Scum and Villainy conversion kit and were disappointed anyway, right?
Well, I was having a good time with Luke and the tubes, like four tubes.
They were fun.
Luke Skywalker, two sets of proton torpedoes. It was great.
It was great. Well, now we're seeing some changes to Scum. There's actually a lot of stuff going down in Scum. One big one going up, though. But the first thing we'll look at is one of Carson's favorite, the IG-88s. You love them in first edition. How are you feeling seeing some point changes for at least
right.
a couple
I
of
mean,
them?
We saw a slight point change in January that got me a little excited, but they just weren't quite there enough. And so now we got another little tick down. Everybody except IG-88A went down 1 point. Which is exciting because now you can fit A, C, and D all with the title now. Nothing else except jamming beams, but I think that should be pretty cool.
Yeah, so I mean, I think you'll see a couple of those pop up. I don't know how viable they're going to be, but it'll be interesting to see a full list with all the titles on it just to get that ship interaction. The one big increase we saw for Scum and Villainy was that Drea Renthal went up a whopping 7 points from 42 to 49. Which was a huge change because this was actually one of Scum's most viable archetypes competitively and extended.
Yeah, I mean, this was basically their only successful list from the last points season. And it got hit pretty hard. You know, Drea goes up 7. The Lock Revenants that were pretty popular with Drea, they go up a little bit. And then, you know, we see Dorsal Turrets or Ion Turrets go up 1 point, and Veteran Turret Gunner also goes up 2 points.
Yeah, so, I mean, all said and done, I think the strongest variant of the Drea list I saw was Drea with the Dorsal Turret, and then 3 the Lock Revenants with Dorsal Turret and Veteran Turret Gunner, so they could get the double shot from the Veteran Turret Gunner when they set their mobile arcs to the front. That's pretty much not doable now. I think that actual variant goes up to, like, 220 points. At the new point scale, so we're not going to be able to see that variation of it. Drea's got a very powerful ability getting that modification offensively, so I think we'll probably see people try to squeeze some lists out that can still take advantage of it. I don't think we'll get anything that's nearly as efficient as the Lock Revenant version.
Yeah, and I think that's good. Though, to balance out the faction, we did see some pretty substantial drops just kind of throughout most of their other extended ships. Most of the large base ships go down. Kurax fighters go down. You know, there's some slight hawk decreases, except of course Polyb, but whatever.
The one you want to use the most. Andy, so since you're kind of a Scum player at heart, at least that's how I'm going to frame you for the podcast. Is there anything here that's exciting for you now, like to play in Scum? Anything that's really caught your eye?
For the past few months, I've been trying out an Asajj list. And so Asajj Ventress, her ability is similar to what it was in first edition, but now it costs you a force to do it. But it's still one of my favorite characters from the Clone Wars TV show, and it was the first ship that I actually tried painting myself.
Right on.
And the Shadowcaster title has also gone down by a few points. And as a Scum player, I do enjoy my tractor beam tokens. And so that points decrease is exciting because it does open up a lot of other list building options. The tough part is that I was also running hate on Asajj, which is now significantly more expensive. So it kind of balanced out the points decrease. So I'm going to have to rethink hate on Asajj. Despite how good that was.
Yeah, well, that was kind of compensating for some of her deficiencies, not having the reposition. She's going to have to take shots.
And I'm excited that Ketsu didn't go up, and so with the Shadowcaster going down, we might see some more Lancer-class pursuit crafts out on the table. I know there was a player in Seattle who went 6-0 on the first day with a Lancer-craft. And so that was really fun to see in the extended format.
Yeah, and I think that archetype of, you know, Ketsu or maybe some other Lancer supporting a few other high damage dealing Scum ships will be, I think, where Scum wants to start looking in extended moving forward.
Well, and I think the fact that you saw when Andy go 6-0 before this point increase means it's, you know, pretty close to being on the cusp of, you know, being in that top tier competitively. So as long as it can perform well, a point decrease will just add on to its ability.
So that player, Garrett Jost, I just looked at his list for the new points change. Still 200 points.
Right on.
You can still fly that list. So
still a viable option. So maybe that variant we'll start to see a little bit more.
And I tried it out. It is fun.
Looking at Hyperspace, you know, the only real changes we saw for Scum, you know, I was hoping for a lot more changes in Hyperspace here. The only thing we really see is the Fire Spray go down a few points across all the pilots.
Yeah, Boba goes down one, but Guri goes up one in the Star Viper, so my Boba Guri list is pretty much the same. Moving on, though, to some of the newer factions in the game now that we've gotten past the original three. A lot of these did not see, I mean, huge changes. The Resistance actually surprisingly did not really get targeted much at all, other than the tragic increase of Lulo Lampar.
I mean, I think when you look at Resistance, you know, it was all about those Resistance A-Wings, and now a lot of them went up, you know, just 1 point. Of course, Lulo, for some reason, needed to go up 5 points. Still not really sure why, when Soontir only went up one.
Okay, that comparison does kind of get me frustrated that, like, Soontir would, at initiative 6, would only go up 1 point, but Lulo goes up 5 points.
Right, I mean, they said unfair in the stream that, you know, okay, these popular high initiative aces, we want to tax them a little bit. And they said, yeah, nothing more than 3 points. Of course, you get to the Resistance page, Lulo goes up 5 points.
5 points. I think it's a personal vendetta that Fantasy Flight has against you, Carson. You must have said something that upset them.
I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I can still, you know, play my list. I'd have to move a few things around. But, you know, the 5 A-Wing list really utilized Lulo, and you know, the other A-Wings going up, they didn't have the flexibility of a bunch of points to play around with. And I thought that was a really cool list that's, I don't think, going to be playable anymore.
It's a little sad. Yeah, and I mean, moving Lulo to a baseline of 43 points, I think that was like basically where you were ending up with a loaded out Lulo. So now you're either going to have to pay a lot of points, much closer to 50 for Lulo, or you're going to have to run basically a stripped down, close to nothing Lulo. Which, I mean, there's still value to be had there. He still really got a really strong ability, but I think this was the biggest hit that Resistance took. Other than that, we saw some point decreases, very slight ones, to a bunch of T-70s. Basically, all the T-70s that we weren't seeing used. So Poe stays the same, Nian stays the same, Bastion stays the same, Jess Pava stays the same. Just all those other ones I can't name.
Jess went down a point.
Oh, you're right. Jess did go down one.
Woohoo!
That's right. I mean, so this is the big reason we brought Andy on is, you know, your Jess Pava and three initiative three T-70s all went down 1 point each. So Andy, what are you going to do with those extra 4 points?
I'm getting me a droid.
For Jess?
For Jess, yep. So I wrote down a whole bunch of different options. There's 5 different droid options to choose from that all fit in that what is now a 5 point bid. I used to have a 1 point bid and nothing to use it with.
Right,
it
was literally just nothing you put on there that would do anything.
Yep. And so now I have 5 different options of droids to choose from that all are either 5 points or low, and they all have 2 charges that I can use for either just rerolls or their abilities.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
I'm very excited
burn those,
about it.
Burn those droids for those rerolls.
Well, and you have to, I mean, obviously you made top 4, so that was, the list is doing all fine for you already before the points change, and now that we're seeing a lot of the really popular stuff get toned down a little bit, that just means you're going to be all the more successful, right?
Yeah, let's go with that.
I think take the bid. I3s are going to be pretty popular.
Got to beat those matched I3s with that linked focus barrel roll. We also saw large bases go down. The Star Fortress went down. I think collectively it was like 2 points across the board. We also saw some pretty substantial changes to the Resistance Falcon with Rey going down 7 points. So a lot cheaper for that Force-using Falcon.
Also very excited about that, as I had a list of Rey and Lulo, rest in peace, and an X-Wing, and Rey going down 7 points makes the Rey with Rose and Finn and the title under 100 points now. So you wow. can just have a free engine upgrade, basically.
Right.
That engine upgrade is 7 points on that ship. So what was arguably too expensive to make competitive list, mm-hmm. now, hey, maybe let's try that out.
Yeah, and Rey's got some serious survivability with that ability, too. So you can use those force charges defensively. And that's really what you're missing out on the Resistance Falcon, now that they only have 3 shields.
And if you put that engine upgrade on, you can arc dodge after you've slooped for not as much of a cost without receiving that stress token from the engine upgrade.
So sad day for Lulo Lampar, but the rest of the Resistance looking okay. Some new options out there.
Yeah, I think you're going to see them trend a little bit away from ace play and a little bit more towards these large base ships with a bunch of crew. The First Order also got a kind of similar rebalancing that I think is a pretty good change here. Basically, all of their small base ships go down, with the exception of the ones that people were playing. Kylo, Ren, Quick Draw, those guys are going to stay the same. Everyone else goes down. Particularly the TIE FO pilots are going down substantially.
Which is exciting. That was something we were asking for in our prediction episode, so I'm really glad to see those go down and actually make it viable to start seeing FOs in lists, because they were just a little too expensive. If you were going to go the First Order route, you were going to go for the good value you had on the high initiative aces or on that Upsilon shuttle.
Right, and balancing out the small base ships going down, those Upsilons go up a few points.
Which I think seems totally fair. The experience I've seen playing against them and just watching people play against them, the value was a little bit too good. And again, it was one of those ships with 4 attack dice where if just the variance swung a little bit in its favor, your games would just fall apart for you pretty quickly. Like, you could not take those on.
Similar to our conversation about the large base ships in the Empire and exploring different crew options, in the First Order, we now have General Hux being reduced to 6 points. And General Hux seems like, if you're only going to be bringing one Upsilon shuttle because two now seems too expensive, having him in your list with a bunch of now cheaper TIE FOs seems like a fun option to explore.
Yeah, Hux's ability, he's a crew card, unique, obviously. While you perform a white coordinate action, you may treat it as red. If you do, you may coordinate up to 2 additional ships of the same ship type, and each ship you coordinate must perform the same action, treating the action as red. So basically, you give your little swarm of TIE FOs just a lot of actions for the cost of a single action, which is pretty cool.
And again, when we're talking about flavor and thematicism in the game of X-Wing, General Hux is a very prominent character in the new movies.
Right.
So they want to be encouraging bringing those well-known characters into the game as well.
And he's such a likable character.
We don't need to get into the specifics of all of our feelings about that movie. I think we can all just appreciate the thematic nature of having him be more prominent in the game.
Overall, though, I think this is a pretty good change for the First Order. I think, you know, putting the focus on the small base ships, will make, you know, games a little bit more exciting. You know, those Upsilons with Reinforce kind of, trended toward a pretty repetitive play pattern. I think these small, First Order TIE fighters are going to be pretty exciting.
And I think it was good, too, that pretty much all the changes we saw were decreases to the faction, which is good because they don't have a lot of new options coming in the next couple waves. So they kind of needed something to keep them relevant. So point decrease is good across the board. So now we're going to get down to our 2 newest factions, the Separatist and the Republic. And I think the Separatist probably saw one of the most wide-sweeping changes of all the factions.
Yeah, so here are the X-Wing developers. We're happy with, you know, the ships that were being played, but not necessarily the loadouts on them. So they wanted to incentivize the swarm play style, but make more options within that swarm viable. So in general, we saw ship costs go down, and then the common upgrades that were being used go up.
Yeah, and this seems more on point with like the thematic nature of the Separatists, where they're just throwing out a bunch of really cost-effective swarms of ships to shift the points away from the ships themselves and into the upgrades you're going to load them out with. We actually saw all the Vulture classes go down at least 1 point. So now on the lowest end, the Trade Federation drone is just 19 points down from 20, which is an insanely cheap ship.
Yeah, I was really surprised to see the Vulture go down any further. The Belbalab also got a pretty big reduction, not just in its point cost, but also the title as well.
Yeah, so the Soulless One title went down from 10 points to 6 points, which means basically the first Belbalab that you invest in got substantially cheaper. So suddenly General Grievous, even though he's just limited to Initiative 4, is starting to look a lot more appealing. 44 points plus the 6-point title, 50 points for that General Grievous in the Soulless One seems like a pretty good deal, actually. In fact, it's actually almost convinced me to pull my Separatists out of the shrink wrap. Almost.
Well, don't get out those energy shell charges. Those went up quite a bit. Maybe too much at 5 points. I'm not sure. I don't really think that the Vulture Swarm with energy shells was really an issue.
I was looking at this. So they went up from 4 to 5, and we saw pretty much all the Vultures go down 1 point. I think, you know, even though it's not maybe the most viable top-level competitive strategy, I think it's a strategy where if someone runs that and they just all happen to work out really well, it's not really a fun game of X-Wing, just spamming 3-dice attacks, you know? I'd rather the games be more interesting rather than just seeing 8 Vultures all loaded out with those charges.
Yeah, and so you'll have a lot of other comparable options for your Vultures. The Discord missiles that launch the buzz droids are going down, grappling and landing struts, for whatever droid ship those go on, both went down from 3 points to 1. So I think you'll have a lot of different ways, to load out your swarm ships within the Separatists.
Since we keep talking about how the X-Wing developers are reducing the points on thematic ships to the point where they are playable, I'm excited to see the grappling and landing struts go down, and I'm hoping to see more people trying the ships that land on rocks or debris and trying out my lists against that. I'm not somebody who plays the Separatists right now, but I would be excited to fly against somebody who just parks their ships on rocks and roll some dice and see what happens.
Well, it gives them more of a flavor feel for sure. I mean, as much as I talk about how much of an abomination grappling struts and landing struts are in terms of card text and the way they're laid out.
Oh, I'm not going to read it.
Oh, yeah, certainly not. Don't. It's not worth reading. Just have someone vaguely explain it to you.
They can say that they get health back when they land. Yeah. I don't care. Fine.
Cool. Sounds great. So it's interesting, though, to see those mechanics come to the forefront. Whereas, like, yes, you can run just the swarms with the energy shell charges, and that's just kind of boring. We've seen things that do similar mechanics in X-Wing, whereas, like, the landing strut, grappling strut thing is actually unique to that faction. So it even if it's not maybe fun to play against, I've never been able to play against it, I haven't seen anyone run it, but it'll at least be very unique to the faction and give the Separatists some more identity. Because I think that's one area where they're really suffering, is they've just kind of become, we're kind of what other factions do, but just not as good most of the time.
Now, we did also see the Sith infiltrators on the other end go up. You know, the named pilots, the people who are playing, Maul and Dooku went up a few points, but also dramatically that hate force power that they were really abusing with their substantial amount of hit points got quite a pretty cool point change, actually. At least the concept of it is cool.
Yeah, so the hate force talent actually scales now based on ship size. So small base ships only pay 3, medium base pays 6, and large base pays 9. And I think that generally makes sense here, actually, because that also kind of generally corresponds to hit point totals. So the ships that were really leveraging this card maybe a little too well were the Sith Infiltrators, where you had really good force ratings on Maul and Dooku. They also had a lot of hit points, so they'd take a lot of damage and be able to regen those force charges pretty frequently.
Yeah, I mean, I personally thought the double infiltrator list was pretty cool. I think apparently I'm in the minority here, and a lot of people don't like playing against it. But from my perspective, 9 at the top end seems a little high. But I think I like the scale concept here because, you know, the thing that makes hate good here is how many hit points you have to play with. And so generally ship size corresponds with hit points. So I think that was a pretty good tool to implement here.
I was interested, though, over on the Empire side that it costs the same on Vader still. So even though Vader doesn't have a lot of hit points, can still use it pretty effectively. So not a big change for him. I thought that would be one of the areas he'd get targeted.
I'm still waiting for more dark side force abilities.
Yeah. Well, I think force abilities in general, too, are there's just like they lowered predictive shot down to one. I'm still not going to use it. I think the force is just a little overvalued, except for on a ship just having a force rating being good. There's not a lot of reason to invest in most of the force powers.
All right. The Republic also got some pretty dramatic changes. And most of these were what we asked for in our previous episode. So that was cool.
Yeah, the simple ones were basically a lot of the named ARC 170s saw some kind of a point decrease. Same goes for pretty much all the named V-19 Torrents, saw at least a slight increase. Some of the high-end ones, like Oddball and Kickback, went down 3 points. I still don't think either of those are usable or good. But it was good to see the decrease there, because that is really the area that needed a lot of attention in the Republic.
Right, they're trending in the right direction there.
One of the interesting changes, and this is one I did not exactly anticipate, was the changes that were made to the Jedi Starfighter, as well as the two configs that you'd see, the 7B config and then the calibrated laser targeting modification config.
Yeah, I mean, so we saw some points changes, you know, within the Jedi pilots. Anakin goes up a little bit, Ahsoka stays the same, everyone else goes down. Some pretty dramatic decreases for Obi-Wan and Plo Koon. And then we get to the configurations that Delta 7B goes up 2 points for all the different initiatives. So Anakin with the 7B that was really popular goes up about 4 points. That feels pretty fine.
One thing that did kind of bum me out, though, on the Jedi end was while most of the Jedi pilots saw a point decrease, four of them, Mace, Luminara, Stacy Tin, and the generic Jedi Knight, just saw a -1 point decrease, which means that the 2 point increase we saw to 7B functionally means they're actually more expensive now. And I was actually hoping to see those lower initiative ones be generally cheaper with the 7B title to make them a little bit more appealing. That bummed me out. I was excited to see that both Obi-Wan and Plo saw a pretty substantial point decrease, 6 points for Obi-Wan, 7 points for Plo Koon. And even with just that 2 point increase on 7B, they're still substantially cheaper than they were. Which I think makes sense because it's kind of turned out that their pilot abilities aren't quite that good. So really you're paying for the force and the initiative alone.
And I think especially when we look at those higher initiative pilots, that decrease makes them pretty exciting options for calibrated laser targeting as well, which got a substantial points decrease. And basically exactly what we asked for.
Yeah, basically it's just about free. On the lowest initiative there, just 2 points for initiative 3 pilots. And at the high end, it's only 5 points. So down from 10 points beforehand. So a really huge jump here, especially on the higher initiative end. Do you guys think that that means that running Jedi Starfighters without 7B is viable now? Like, are they still worth the investment with just 4 hit points?
I really want to try it, is where I'm at with calibrated laser.
I'm also excited to see talented players trying it. Mm-hmm. One of the lists that I've been flying against pretty frequently is Anakin and Mace with either Wolf in the ARC 170 or a couple Gold Squadron Torrents. And while those lists are fun to play against, I'm excited to see the developers encouraging other play styles. So if you are bringing calibrated laser targeting, you are not going to be the heavy flanking, I'm going to destroy you right now type Anakin. But maybe we see some of these other pilots actually using their abilities more effectively. So how can you leverage the substantial decrease of Obi-Wan or Plo Koon with some of the decreases in the Torrents and the ARC 170s?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I can understand why they'd make this decision to shift the points away from the high end there, because as much as I'd like to see the 7B go down for the lower initiatives, those are already pretty much the only variant of Jedi Starfighter we'd see would be 7B Jedi Starfighters. So it's good to see that they swung a lot on the other end to make the non-7B version a lot more appealing, and especially combining that with all the generic decreases or the name pilot decreases for the ARC-170 and for the Torrent, there's going to be a lot more room there where you could run a list where a Jedi is actually more of a support ship rather than kind of the force-powered X-Wing that it was before.
This will also deter people who have been flying the Anakin Mace with a couple Torrents and some regen droids play style of get some points and then run for time. So thinking about the competitive side of the gameplay, while regen has been significantly reined in for second edition, there are still ways to utilize those R2 astromechs to make it a negative play experience for your opponent, even though it's on your opponent to actually track those ships down. It is very challenging to try and get that last shield off of Anakin when you've only got 15 minutes left and they can do their five straight and boost and then barrel roll two.
Yeah, I do see that problem too, and I'm as guilty of running that as anybody here. I think the Jedi Starfighters, that you could load them out so much. The Anakin variant I was running recently was like a 90-point Anakin with a shield upgrade, really leveraging the fact that he can hold onto those points so well. The Jedi Starfighters with their persistent defensive mods from the Force and their ability to double reposition pretty much every turn made them really good at running away once they had a points advantage. So it's good to see the game shift away from that, because that's, you know, to me, that kind of game is not quite as bad as, you know, a fortressing game that we see or just the munitions race that we saw in first edition, but it's still not healthy for the overall course of the game. Like, I like to see more games actually play out, games where, you know, I actually end up destroying every ship my opponent has rather than getting a 20-point lead and then just running away for six turns.
But of course, the best change to the Republic is none of the Jedi stuff. It's dedicated going down to one.
Carson, what does dedicated do? I haven't looked at it for such a long time since it was 3 points.
It's like Handmaiden, but worse, I think.
Describe it with a card that hasn't come out yet. Amazing. If I recall correctly,
yeah, so it only goes on two pilots in the Republic, the Initiative 3 ARC-170 and the Initiative 3 Torrent, the Blue Squadron Protector and the Squad 7 Veteran. And that allows those pilots to take a strain token to allow a friendly ship, either with dedicated or a limited ship, to reroll one defense die. Super powerful.
And of all the predictions slash wishes we made in our last episode, this was one that came true pretty much exactly, moved it down from 3 points to 1 point, which seems like where it should be to fall in line with those other kind of iconic faction cards that we see in other factions here. I'm still a little bummed. I was kind of hoping they'd add a talent slot to the low-end generics for the clones, just so this would be even cheaper. We did see a 1 point decrease for both of the Initiative 7 generics in the Torrent and in the ARC-170. So the Blue Squadron Protectors down from 29 to 28, and the Squad 7 Veterans down from 47 to 46. So the net decrease, if you're including dedicated on the ship, is going to come to about 3 total points down, which is good. I'm still not 100% convinced that you want to invest, you know, in the case of the V-19, 3 extra points, or in the case of the ARC-170, 4 extra points over the baseline generic to get the dedicated ability, but it's good to see that it's actually now kind of a viable option.
Yeah, I'm excited to at least try dedicated now.
We'll have to do some experimenting.
And so that just about does it for all the points changes. You know, feel free to go through the documents and let us know what points changes you're most excited about.
Yeah, do you think there's a huge one that we missed that we should have spent more time focusing on? Let us know. Go to facebook.com/radioTCX, find the post for episode 171, and let us know what should we have paid more attention to. Andy, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I hope I didn't lead you guys too far astray with my lack of significant points knowledge and my heavy emphasis on thematicism and having fun.
No, that's an important perspective.
And also, it added like an extra 20 minutes of content on the show. And yeah, it didn't cost me anything. You came for free. So thanks. We'll have you on again soon.
Thank you.
Before we go, I just want to give a shout out to Luke and Jim and the rest of the Steel City scum, who ran an excellent hyperspace trial, and to Paul Fuller, our champion. He actually helped me put together all these points changes. I just stole a spreadsheet, which was very helpful. So thank you, everyone.
Also got to give a shout out to Austin Musil, who I told him he's a cool guy. I met him at Fargo. I told him I gave him a shout out on the podcast 2 weeks ago, and I totally forgot until this moment. So shout out to him. He's fun to talk to. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/RadioTCX and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy the show, please go on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review, along with a comment saying what you like about the podcast and what others would be interested in listening.
If you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/RadioTCX and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means so much to us.
Again, folks, thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.